Hina, better known to myself as Hare Krishna Devi, has introduced myself as a practitioner of Bhakti Yoga. I'm sure you've all heard the word yoga. You may not have all heard the word bhakti. Like several words originating in Sanskrit, the word bhakti is gradually entering the English language as the words yoga, guru, karma, these words have entered the English language. The word bhakti is gradually entering, more so in America, I think. And the word kirtan also. Kirtan means the kind of singing that we just did. Do you know that word? This kind of devotional singing. Bhakti is usually translated as devotion. Devotion to Krishna. And kirtan means singing the names of Krishna. But I'm going to go back a bit to the beginning of the philosophical underpinnings of this all, which is reincarnation, which is the understanding of reincarnation is the basis of all yoga. Generally, people think yoga means exercises. The exercise system is part of one system of yoga. It's very effective for maintaining and mending health, but it's not the essence of yoga. The essence of yoga is similar to the English word yoke. It's a bit of a anarchic word now. It used to be yoking the bulls to the plow, but it means to join together. And it means to join our consciousness, our soul, with the Supreme Consciousness, the Supreme Soul. So underlying all of this is the understanding that we are spiritual beings and that we are now in a particular body, but that we have been in many bodies and that we will continue going on to other bodies until we achieve yoga, which means we link with the Supreme Soul and we don't come back in this world. Why should we want to do that? This is all treated in Bhagavad Gita. I think some of you may have heard of Bhagavad Gita. It's sometimes referred to as the Bible of Hinduism, which is a misnomer in a couple of ways. It's about as accurate as you could get. But if we, for a preliminary statement, but to call it the Bible is a misnomer in as much as the Bible is the one book of Christianity and Judaism. Whereas the Bhagavad Gita is the essence of a huge body of spiritual literature. So it's not the one book, but it's the essence of all the books. And also the term Hinduism is a misnomer because it's a relatively modern term. It's not in the ancient Sanskrit literature at all. It appears to have been given by the Muslims to the people who lived in India. And it was originally a pejorative term. Bhagavad Gita was last spoken 5,000 years ago. But within Bhagavad Gita, Krishna, who's the speaker of Bhagavad Gita, and also the object of devotion, the person who is called God in English, but not exactly the understanding that people have generally of God, he said that I spoke this knowledge many millions of years ago. So you can see we're getting in a bit of a tangle here with what's considered to be the way things are, the way that we're taught at school, because according to what we learn at school, millions of years ago, there weren't any people to speak anything. millions of years ago, there was some bubbly soup, and organisms developed from that, and here we are today. But according to Bhagavad Gita, the life is eternal. It's not a product of chemicals. So you can see, we're right from the outset, it's a completely different perspective on everything. So that life is eternal. Life is not a product of chemicals. It's pretty good news, because if we think we're just a bunch of chemicals, it's pretty disheartening, isn't it? Who are you? If someone says, who are to you? Well, you could answer better according to the materialistic output. I am 96% dihydrogen oxide, and there are all kinds of chemicals in the body. Don't tell them you've got gold in the body. Someone might try to extract it. There's gold, silver, nitrogen, helium, I guess, must be there somewhere. Lots of carbon in the 4% or so. But I'm not chemicals. You're not chemicals. We don't, well, I hope we don't treat each other as chemicals. Actually, we don't, do we? Because we were just talking last night about vandalism, how kids, some kids, they go around and they burn things is the latest fashion, it seems. Or they wreck a car. That's a criminal activity. If you get some, I don't know, what do you use, some metal bars and wreck a car, that would be considered a criminal activity. But it's a much more serious criminal activity if we get a metal bar and hit a human being and kill them. Why? If the car is chemicals and the human is chemicals, then what's the difference? And why should we... Of course, it's understandable that someone would be upset if their car gets smashed up, but it's not as lamentable as if a human being gets smashed up. So why the differentiation? There's a big difference. The big difference is that we are actually the spiritual beings. It's the body is something that we now have yoga with the body. We're linked up with the body, but that's temporary. The body is temporary. The soul is eternal. That's the first axiom, to be accepted as an axiom. And depending on that, if we accept that, then our whole outlook on life is going to be very different. Either we think that, well, we're here now, and we don't have very long, so cram in as much as you can. Eat, sleep, drink, be merry, and enjoy, for tomorrow we shall all be dead. But our motto is introspect, try to understand, chant, for tomorrow we shall all be alive. We don't die. We shall be alive tomorrow and the next day. And the body, there's no guarantee that we'll even be alive for another split second. And it is guaranteed. I don't want to depress you all, but it's a fact. It's just a fact. It's a fact. And if you're destined to go, if your time's there, then you can have the doctors here, but they won't be able to help you. Sorry to tell you. One thing is for sure, that despite having the best doctors and the best medical treatment, and we're not going to live in this body very long. None of us. But we will continue to live. And we get different bodies according to our karma. For every science studies, for every action there is an equal and opposite reaction, and it's there on the subtle platform also. Maybe we can get away with burning down buildings in the center of the city. We can get away with it from the law, but there is the higher law also. And that's why we all have unique bodies and mentalities that goes with that, because it's a continuation. Continuation. The body that we get is a continuation of the consciousness that we carry from a previous life. And we go on and on and on until we come to the point of spiritual realization. Spiritual realization is the platform of technical terms. They may enter the English language at some point also, because they're, again, very, very basic to the spiritual culture, which is predominant in India. But it's not Indian spiritual culture. We can't call it Indian, because it's universal. Just like 2 + 2 = 4, it's true in England, it's true in India. It's, if you go to the other side of the universe, if there is another side of the universe, should be true there also. So this spiritual knowledge, it's not really Indian. That's why, again, to call it Hinduism is a bit of a misnomer. It's not constricted. Even though that culture which fosters this knowledge and this practice, it's been prominent in India, but it's not confined to India. So, now I got lost. Where was I going? I went down a side alley. This Satchidananda is a common term, well-known term, to describe the state of spiritual existence. And it means eternity, knowledge, and bliss. And that's really what we're all aspiring to, isn't it? No one wants to die. We'd like to live forever. We try to keep the body healthy as long as we can. But, well, we should do. Not everyone does, but a lot of people do a lot of things which are not very good for the body. But we would like to live forever. Actually, we do, but we have to change bodies again and again. And it's not pleasant. Death is not pleasant. You must have seen, how many deaths have you seen in your life? Couldn't count it. Are you inured to it now? No.
Mm.
It's an event, isn't it? Yeah. It's a major event. Oh, just this year? I see, so you're still feeling it. Yeah, you're still feeling it. So you're still feeling it. Yeah. See, even if we all know everyone has to die, but it still affects us when someone close passes away. So that's why we have to practice yoga, so that we can go beyond birth and death. After death is birth. Jatasya hi dhruvang mrityu, dhruvang janma mrityasya cha, as is stated in Bhagavad Gita. We have half of that saying in English, as sure as death. For everyone who is born, death is certain, and for everyone who has died, birth is certain. But spiritual existence means beyond the platform of birth and death. And to have full knowledge, full cognizance of who we are. At the present time, we identify fully with this body. We presume this body is me. It seems like that, because we see, touch, smell, feel, hear, taste through the body. We experience emotions. We have relationships with people connected with this body, just like you're saying about your mother. Seems like you went into a reverie there, thinking of your mother. But we're going from body to body, and the set of friends that I have, or relatives, that all changes. And set of senses I have. If I get a non-human body, then we might, then certain life forms, they hear in broader spectrums than we do. They see, that's in the museum, you can look through some glass and see how a housefly sees the world. So we get a different set of senses, and whatever body we get, we take it, this is me, but it's not really me, because I am going from body to body to body. Who is the real me? There's a story narrated in, an anecdote, because it really happened, of a king who had a son. The son died, and by the power of the king's guru, the son, the baby, still a baby, was brought back to life. And the king said, "Oh, my son." And the baby said, "Who are you?" "I'm your father." "Which father?" "I had so many fathers." And then the baby said, "Anyway, I'm not staying here. I'm going. I'm destined to go. We've had so many fathers, so many mothers, so many sisters, so many brothers. I was struck when I arrived here and I saw the list of names from this village, of the names of men who died in the First World War, that from such a small village, it must have been smaller 100 years ago. So many men died. Where are they now? They're still living, but not with those names, not with those bodies. So eternity, knowledge, to know who we actually are. I am not this body. It seems like it, but if we understand that I am not chemicals, I'm more than the chemicals, then I'm not the body. And we all, Sat-Chit, eternity, knowledge, and bliss. Ananda, that word must be coming gradually. Ananda, if not Sat-Chit Ananda, at least Ananda, because that is the all spiritual practitioners talk about Ananda in whatever, in India, whatever language they're speaking. Ananda can be translated as happiness, bliss, ecstasy. But particularly spiritual happiness. It's differentiated from material happiness. Material happiness means that which we perceive through the body and mind. Ananda is the happiness of the soul, which we all aspire for. If we think about it, everything that every living being, not only humans, animals, birds, fish, insects, reptiles, plants even, everything that every living being does at every moment is meant to try to get happiness, or at least to try to avoid distress. Everything. Is there anything that we don't do outside of these two parameters? We are happiness seeking beings, which suggests that our nature, our inner nature, our real nature, is to be always fully happy. Whereas in this material world, as Bhagavad Gita points out, the very nature of this world is that although we try for happiness, we cannot but contract distress. And particularly four kinds of distress are pointed out: janma, mrityu, jara, vyadhi, birth, death, old age, and disease. And if you want to look at it from another perspective, there are three categories of distress. Adhyatmik, that which comes from our body and our mind. Body aches and pains, and it's not only aches and pains, there's what other kinds of bodily distress? There's nausea, then numbness. It's not exactly a pain, is it? Lack of sensation. That's also one kind of distress, isn't it? And from the mind, so much distress we feel. Fear, anxiety, stress. It's all comes from the mind. All is going on in the mind. So that's one category of distress. There's adibhautik distress, which means distress which others give to us by physical assault, verbal assault, neglect can be one form of distress given to us by others apart from humans. The example I usually give in India when I'm talking about this is mosquitoes, which is almost... Is it? Dogs barking at night is also common in India. There must be millions of dogs, wild dogs in India, who generally during the daytime in the heat they relax, and at night when we're trying to relax, they're kings of the street. They run around barking. So it's not a major distress, but it's not something we invite them, please come and bark so I can't go to sleep. So other living beings, snakes, not much problem from snakes in England. I think during my whole stay in here in England, I only ever saw one. What do they call it? Adder. Is it an adder? Saw one once. It's the only poisonous snake. And there's some other grass, green snake or something. Grass snake it's called? Yeah. So other living beings, and there's also adidaivik, which literally translates as that which is given by the gods, or it's understood to be natural disturbances. Because the understanding is that nature, there are gods or higher living beings who oversee nature. It's not just chemicals, again. Life is the principle, not matter. So comes in the form of excessive heat, not much known in England, but in the last few years it has been also. Excessive cold, too much rain, not enough rain, typhoons, tsunamis, droughts, all this kind of thing. So these are natural disturbances. So anyway, I think you get the point. This world is a world in which there is a lot of distress, unavoidable, and therefore people become yogis so that they can cross beyond the distress and go to that state where there is full bliss eternally without any disturbances of dogs barking or dying, getting reborn with a new set of hopes which are not fulfilled. And so that's the goal of yoga, is to enter the state of eternity, bliss, and knowledge. Anyone interested? That's what we'd all like, isn't it? Is it possible to attain? The answer is yes. Certainly it's possible to attain. It's not very easy to attain in the sense that because we are very strongly attached to the situation we're in. We identify with it so strongly. So yoga is a practice. We have a practice that we take up with the understanding that we have time. It's not a one-shot job. You either do it this life and you get it right or you get it wrong. That's actually, to be frank, I don't want to hurt anyone's sensibilities, but in my youth, I had a lot of problem with the Christianity I was raised in, with the idea that you get it right this time and you go to heaven, or that's it, you're finished with no hope of any redemption, you're finished forever. And I thought, there's something wrong there. It doesn't seem right. The universe has got to be more fair than that. It's got to be a better chance than that. So when I was introduced to the teachings of Bhagavad Gita, it made sense to me. I also didn't, this of course is something personal, but the idea that there's ultimate spiritual existence is just some void, that didn't appeal to me either. Now, generally we think of Indian spiritualism or Buddhism or all these things that you just eventually merge into some void or some oneness, some light. I didn't find that very appealing. The idea of love of God and being sheltered and protected by God, that I found that very appealing. But the idea that you, this all merciful, all loving God, if you get born in the wrong religion, you get thrown in hell forever, it didn't click with me. So that there is reincarnation and that there is a supreme, eternal, merciful, loving, friendly, fun-loving God. That's why I said the term God doesn't really fit with Krishna. But that eternal existence is not simply like a prolonged meditation session, but it's active and blissful with love. Love means selflessness, giving ourselves to Krishna, and Krishna gives himself to us. So this is the ultimate goal of yoga, bhakti yoga. Bhakti, you remember, means devotion. So devotion means giving our heart. We are spiritual beings. What does that mean, spirit, spiritual being? Well, it means we're eternal, we're full of bliss, we're full of knowledge. But what is that bliss? What is that happiness? Happiness, ultimately, the highest happiness is not what we get, but what we give. And what we give, the highest giving is, or giving is an act of love. How that giving of love to Krishna is our, that is the highest manifestation of our spiritual existence. And Krishna reciprocates. God reciprocates. He doesn't need anything from us. But his nature is to be loving. That is the beginning understanding of this yoga philosophy, is that we're all eternal living beings who are meant for blissful life. We're not meant to die. And yoga is ultimately meant to free us from birth and death and to enter spiritual existence. And the highest understanding, what is the highest principle? What is the ultimate meaning of life? Is love. Love is the highest. Love in this world is conceived of between different human beings. Love in this world often leads to hate also, just like those men in the First World War. For love of their country, they went off to hate people from another country because they loved their country. And they ended up with their name on a plaque here. So love in this world, it's restricted because our understanding of who we are is restricted. And we restrict it to certain bodies, certain species. We may love the humans and have no love for other species. And to me, again, I don't want to hurt anyone's sensibilities, but I should say that it seems monstrous that we can have so much feeling about the human rights and the Palestinians being killed, whereas every day literally millions of animals and birds and fish are being killed unnecessarily. Because we don't need to eat flesh to maintain the body. So, the idea of love in this world is constricted by our understanding of who we are. It's constricted to our own body and those who are in relation to this body. Love, the pure love means love for all living beings, but centered on the center of all living beings, who is Krishna, who is the supreme loving person and who reciprocates with us fully. That we all have in our essential spiritual existence an intimate loving relationship with Krishna. So love is the highest, love is supreme. Krishna is supreme in the, if we want to talk about hierarchy, but in the liberated state, when we're beyond birth and death in full spiritual existence, he treats us like an equal. That's the highest level. So there's quite a lot of stuff, probably, that I've just thrown out here. Again, it is a completely different outlook on life. You were in Kerala. Did you perceive that? It depends how much you go deep and you meet with people. I think it takes time to you have to spend time. But many people feel when you go to India that there's underlying it all, even despite the modern commercialism, there's a very strong spiritual core. Did you feel that?
Yes, there certainly was. We were fortunate in that although we went on holiday, we formed a very close relationship and attachment with the guy who was taking us around, our driver. And he sort of deviated from the accepted program and went back from himself to meet some of his family, his aunt, who lived a very simple life, Pepper. And because he knew that we were going to meet his aunt, he'd arranged for his wife and two daughters to come up and meet us there. So we had some insight into the simple life. Very, very simple life, no running water, no electricity. But they seem perfectly happy to share what little they had, offering us a bowl of rice and coconut. And we came away with enough pepper to last the rest of our life.
Or an Indian family for a week. They prefer chilies nowadays.
Spirituality was certainly there, and as we moved up, we stayed initially in a Muslim-run hotel, and then we moved and stayed with a Christian family, and then the last place we stayed at was Hindu.
It was a retreat, really, where we were practicing yoga every day.
That would be Hindu. Very different outlook on life, yeah.
We had wasted a lot of our resources because there are masses of people who are so distressed and so many painkillers, drugs, you know, and distress, and they're still not dying happy.
No,
we have all the care. We have the best doctors, we have the best hospital, and of course we're short of them now. But this knowledge, why it has been dreamed of, and why it distresses me a lot.
Yes.
And then I sometimes find it totally helpless how to actually change their minds.
Criminal. You called that criminal, right? Michael, that this knowledge of yoga is not given.
Now, while you were in Bathroom, I shared that I had similar questions as a young Catholic boy, and I researched reincarnation in particular and discovered that it actually had been part of Christian theology and then was removed by one of the popes. So because it was too confusing.
I understood it for some political purposes and this and that. Ah, yes, please.
In your belief, do you think you come back in a human body? Or does it depend on how you have lived your life now?
In our belief, do we think that we come back in a human body, or does it depend on how we've lived our life now? That term, belief, we don't treat it as a belief. We treat it as a fact. I just want to discuss that a little bit more, because generally, religion is, even the dictionary meaning is said, a kind of faith. But if we think about it, either it's a fact or it isn't. It's not dependent on my belief. If I believe that I will be born again, but it's not going to happen, then it's not going to happen, not by belief. And if I believe that I won't be born again, but it is going to happen, then it will happen. So we should really try to find out. And actually, of course, in the modern age, people, they think that everything has to be done in a scientific way, and the only thing that's real is something that can be measured. Although that's not the only way to perceive the world. But actually, there has been scientifically conducted research into reincarnation. If you Google Ian Stevenson, you'll find he passed on somewhere. He's somewhere else now. But he was a professor in America, and there's someone else in Australia, but even Stevenson is better, who devoted his whole life to researching instances of what seemed to be evidence of reincarnation. And many, many instances of children talking about my husband, and they don't think it's a previous life. They still relate to them like that. And he did it in a very scientific way. In fact, for the common man, maybe too scientific, because it was too he aimed it at the scientific community and put it all in what we would call scientific jargon and this and that. But he was very particular that if there's any possibility of anyone fudging the details, or any possibility of that, he would throw it. But he still came out with literally thousands of cases where children who could not have known such information unless they'd actually been in that situation. Literally thousands of such cases. So if this scientific community was actually scientific, then they should accept this. But because they have a belief in materialism in the philosophical sense of the term, which is that matter is all that is, there's nothing spiritual, therefore they just ignore it. But even scientifically, I would take it as a fact. Not to speak of the philosophical implications. We can all intuitively understand that we are more than chemicals. I'm not just a bag of chemicals waiting to be dissolved in time. So do we come back as humans? There are two major factors: how we act, and what is the state of our consciousness, our desires. And we can get human bodies, we can get higher than human. There are higher living beings within the universe, and there are lower also. So we can, for instance, if we are very interested in having lots of sex, the human body is not the best body. So we're more likely to be reincarnated as a monkey. Or a pigeon. That's an example. It's actually better for us, for what we desire. Of course, it doesn't bring us to the platform of eternity, bliss, and knowledge. It's quite complex, actually, because if we consider that at every moment, we're generating new desires. It's a whole process which is going on. And we're also influenced by our previous impressions, not only in this life, but in previous lives. So it's an extreme, our consciousness, our state of consciousness, extremely complex. And at every moment we're doing something, and everything has some reaction. So it's extremely complex. And it's difficult to predict what will happen in future. Exactly. But yeah, we get different bodies. Oh, I'll give an example I often give that. Many people, they want to be the leader, either the leader of the country or the leader of the mayor of the city, or do you have the village head, anything like that? Is there anything? Chief. Village chief? No, you don't know. Probably there isn't. Parish council. Yeah, yeah. So people like to be leaders, or the leader of the choir, or the best boxer in the world. I am the greatest. Remember that one? He had good enough sense, Cassius Clay, when he became Muhammad Ali, to understand, I'm not the greatest. He changed his tune. So that desire is there, but not everyone can be the top. If there's probably all the MPs in the House of Commons, they all want to be Prime Minister, but they can't all be the Prime Minister. And they became the MP, and others within their own party wanted to get the nomination. They didn't get it, and then they went for the vote, and there's, what is it, Conservative, Labour, New Labour, Liberal Democrat, BNP, and who knows what else. I'm a bit out of touch with all these things. So out of many people, one becomes the MP, and out of Manushanam Sahasrisham or something, and then out of so many MPs, only one becomes the Prime Minister. Who knows what he's going to be in his next life? Karmically, it's a very heavy job because you have such a heavy responsibility. But so many people had the desire to be a leader, but they didn't have the karmic qualification to do so. But in their next life, they may have the opportunity. But if they haven't done enough pious activities to become a leader in human society, they can become a leader in other society. I mentioned about dogs running around in the streets at night in India. They go in packs of about 6 or 7. One of them's the leader. Had his desire fulfilled. One barks louder than the others. So, yeah. It all works out. What we do, we get body after body. It's not a good idea to become a monkey or a dog, or even a human for that matter. It's better to go to the spiritual world and sing and dance and be happy always with Krishna. That's what we believe. The reincarnation thing is more verifiable. Krishna, we have to accept on faith. We can understand, unless we're intrepid followers of Richard Dawkins and company, that there is a God. There is control in the universe. It's not going on just somehow from a singularity, which means they haven't got the faintest idea how it happened. There was nothing, and then everything came into existence, and then everything just fell into place. Yeah, it's a joke, isn't it? Yeah, I often give the example that this came into being by chance. Not very likely. Impossible. So it's not a very difficult thing to understand that there is intelligent purpose behind the universe. So there is God. Just like in the country, we can understand, if I come to this country, I can understand there should be some political leader. I may not know who that person is or what they like to eat for breakfast, but we can understand there is a leader. So in the same way, we can understand there is God, but what does he like to eat for breakfast? What does he do? And what kind of a person is he? We can't know that logically. So if we want to know what is the name of the leader, what does he eat for breakfast, how does he dress, what's his wife's name, what's his girlfriend's name, if he has a girlfriend also. You're not supposed to do that. You can find that out. Well, nowadays you just Google it up, right? You can get information. So that there is God, we can understand. What is the nature of God? What kind of person is he? That we have to take information from those who know. And actually, you may be surprised to know, Krishna, God, has many wives, because there are many devotees who like to relate to him like that. And he has girlfriends also, because they like to relate to him like that also. Now that's quite a theological leap from God the Father, the Son, and the Holy Ghost. Sometimes people object. They say, well, why is God he all the time? What about, why not a she? Well, she's there too. But that's very high. Very high. Anything else? You mean when there's the destruction of the whole universe? Earth, yeah. Well, that's another interesting thing. In Abrahamic theology, there's the idea that there's God, he created the universe, he destroyed it, or he will destroy it. There's a day of judgment, and then it's all over. And that concept was brought with humanism and enlightenment and religious concepts were largely thrown out or ignored, but the concept of the universe being created one time and destroyed, that got brought into modern scientific thinking because they didn't have any other concept. But in the Vedic concept, or actually in civilizations throughout the world, that's another thing which modern scientists don't want to accept, that there have been many civilizations all over the world with advanced knowledge in many spheres. And there's stark evidence of it all over the world and with ancient buildings which can't be built nowadays because people don't have the knowledge how to do so. They don't have that such sophisticated engineering. In the cosmological concepts of the ancients, time is not linear, it's circular. There's creation of the universe, there is maintenance for some time, and there is destruction. And then again creation, and then again maintenance, then destruction. So if one is an ant at the time of destruction, then when at the time of cosmic recreation, one will come back as an ant or whatever one was supposed to be.
All that
like another world then? If this world is destroyed by man, for example, which he has the power to do.
Man has the power to destroy, theoretically has the power to destroy. Destroy the world, but ultimately not a blade of grass moves without the consent of the Supreme Lord. So theoretically man may have the capacity to destroy the world, but despite his best efforts, may not be able to do so also if it's not ratified by a higher power. Yeah, if you're going to rush off, please take your soup and go.
Sorry, we have to go. Miri has an appointment, and I've got my family coming in half an hour.
Okay, just take little soup.
Sorry about this. It's just unfortunate that it all happened together.
Does anyone else want to get their soup? Spiritual soup. You can take it, you have a container to take it home. Just take a little sip, make us happy. In India they won't let you out without taking some food.
We will share this.
Thank you so much for coming.
Thank you.
And Hare Krishna to you. Yeah, you can distribute the soup to everyone. You can have a food for the stomach and food for the soul.
When you were talking about the destruction, the potential destruction of the world, isn't that the world as we...
The physical world, yeah, the physical world, yeah. Spiritual world, the spiritual world is never destroyed. That's the difference. Yeah. Yeah. Jesus said something like that, isn't it? Lived. Well, he said many things like that. You have to pick up your cross. Yeah. Why is that? Self-centeredness? Why can't we live? Why can't we love our neighbors as ourselves? We put ourselves in the center instead of putting God in the center. And as long as we put ourselves in the center, we can never be happy, actually. Yeah. It's harder to be good than to be bad.
It's harder to be good. It's easier to be bad.
Yeah.
Normally. I mean, we all try. I know some very good people who don't believe in God or believe once you die, you die. And the reason of that is they've seen so much tragedy and evil in this world. There's a lot of good. And they think, well, it can't be a God. A little baby can die in a cruel way and never see life. That's how some people think. And you think, well, if there's a loving God, why does he let such things happen?
What's the Christian answer to why do bad things happen to good people? Or why do bad things happen to innocent?
Well, we live in our own world, and we believe in the devil.
Yeah.
And I believe, I mean, Jesus was a rebel, wasn't he?
Definitely.
He was a rebel. Because he upset the religious people. But, you see, people in them days who saw his way he lived and what he did. And they still rebelled against him and he was crucified.
They wanted to kill him, yeah. But what's the explanation of why the baby dies?
Why does it? Some people say, why does that little baby die? You know, I've not heard a lie. Or some cruel people do evil things to
children, and they don't see life on this earth. People just see this life as their life.
Mm.
You understand that? It's their life.
That's all there is.
Yes, thank you. But I mean, your basis is love. You love God more than anything, and you love your neighbour as yourself.
I saw something about Satanists in America. They said that God's not in control of this world, Satan's in control, so better worship Satan. No, I'm just saying what they said. Because that was apropos you're saying that it's easier to be bad than to be good.
There's a lot of evil. Even people use religion for evil means for their own gain.
Well, that's one reason why atheism is increasing. Religion is the opium of the people. But it's like Jesus is often misquoted as saying, money is the root of all evil, whereas the saying is, the love of money is the root of all evil. So it's not exactly that religion is the opium of the people, but misuse of it. It's a very powerful motivator and can be used to mislead and exploit people. So many people nowadays, it seems in America more, which is overall a more religious country than Britain, definitely. There are many people nowadays who say that I'm spiritual but not religious, because they want to feel that they have their spiritual life, but they don't want to subscribe to any religion or dogma.
A lot of it's man-made. People get
older
something and then turn it to their own.
Yeah. I often wonder if all the great spiritual leaders of the past, Jesus himself, if they would identify with what goes on in his name. What do you think? A lot of what goes on in his name. I don't think he'd identify. My mother was from Belfast, so she's from a Catholic family. So I wonder, I used to go to Belfast and think that, well, if Jesus came here, what would he say to the Catholics and Protestants? What would be his message to them? They both claim that he's our man, not your man. But I don't think he would identify with any of that stuff. Yeah. You are nodding appreciatively. Yes, yeah. But he also said, I've come to fulfill the law, which gives you the whole Old Testament, doesn't it?
Yes, well, again. I thought, and that's like yourself, I fall away then from that. And luckily, yoga found me a long time ago. But the thing about reincarnation was mentioned earlier on, I knew that. And I tell people.
It really made sense to me, yeah.
It makes sense, but again, I'm not very eloquent with words. Instinctively simple that there are only two things that motivate everything in our life, and one is love and one is fear. And I think that the Pope we were talking about in 502, Bilnius the third, then the actions of keeping that knowledge from the people was one of fear. They didn't want the people to have understanding and the power that it gave them, and the freedom from fear, because they wanted people to live in fear.
And the same is happening now, as far as I can see it. All the bad that happens in the world is simply fear. Breeding fear to keep the masses down.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's quite apparent in all this. I mean, right at the present time, they're talking about we have to ratcheting up the security levels because of the threat of the Iraq, what is it called, the Islamic State. They're deliberately putting us into fear so they can control us more.
We say in Krishna consciousness that every word in the spiritual world, every word is a song, and every step is a dance.
It's an opera. every word, every, there's no speaking, it's all singing, because everyone, so when you're very happy, you don't speak, it comes, you sing, and when you don't walk, you jig along like a dance. So that's the spiritual world is an opera.
Why choose it?
Maharaj
has traveled, having lived in India for so many years, over 30 years, he has traveled so many parts of India. I'm really jealous of that. In this book, he takes us through to India. He's the guide, and there's some beautiful photographs and very wonderful and remote places as well he's been to. So if you want, he's brought some of his books along. And this, of course, is the Bhagavad Gita, as it is. It's a small pocket version. It's, I think, 5 pounds is this one. This one,
I don't know the prices, actually. I don't... I don't deal with that usually. I have my assistants.
He didn't tell me.
A donation from your heart.
But this is wonderful guide to you can see the truck on the ledge.
It is 1:30 now. So
shall I move on?
So
but you want to spend a little more time with the people?
If people want to ask. If you're happy, if people want to ask more questions. Talk to you.
But we have to wait anyway to
no,
to lock up you. Or something.
No, I think
okay, then you can drop me off and I'll come back again, is it?
Oh,
you'll come back, yeah. Okay.
If you wish. Whenever you want.